2. The weeks that followed were probably the happiest of my entire life. The majority of the psychology courses were held in Green Hall, which was just a few minutes' walk from McCosh and Dickinson, where I attended English classes, so we were almost always together. We'd go to the Firestone Library, walk past Princeton University Stadium on our way home, stop off at the Art Museum or one of the cafes around it, or take the train to New York City, where we watched movies like Dirty Dancing, Spaceballs, and The Untouchables. Laura had lots of friends, most of them fellow psychology students. She introduced me to some of them, but she preferred to spend her time with me. As far as music went, we didn't have the same tastes. She liked the latest sounds, which in those days meant Lionel Richie, George Michael, and Fleetwood Mac, but she stalwartly listened along when I played my alternative rock and jazz cassettes and CDs. Sometimes we'd sit up talking until early in the morning, doped up on nicotine and caffeine, and then groggily go to lectures just after 2 or 3 hours sleep. Although she had a car, she rarely used it, and we both preferred to walk or cycle. On those evenings when she didn't feel like watching TV, Laura would conjure up the spirit that lurked in an NES console, and we'd shoot ducks or play Being Bubbles the Fish in Clue Clue Land. One day, after we'd been playing games like that for a couple of hours, she said, "Richard," she never shortened my name to Richie or Dick, "did you know that we, by which I mean our brains, can't tell the difference between fiction and reality most of the time? That's why we're able to cry at one movie and laugh at another, even though we know that what we're seeing is just acting and that the story was dreamed up by a writer. Without this defect of ours, we'd be nothing more than ROBs. ROB meant Robotic Operating Buddy, a gadget invented for lonely teens by the Japanese. Laura dreamed of buying such a device, calling it Armand, and teaching it to bring her coffee in bed and buy her flowers when she was feeling blue. What she didn't realize was that I'd have happily done both of these things, and many others, for her, without any training. You don't know what pain is until you get a cut deep enough to make you realize that the previous wounds had just been scratches. In early spring, my problems with adapting to life at Princeton had been compounded by a tragic event. I'd lost Dad. A heart attack had killed him almost instantly while he was at work. Not even the swift intervention of his colleagues could save him, and he was declared dead less than an hour after.